And good evening. Welcome to Youth Beat Radio here on 98.3 and 102.1 FM. I'm Nishant Makija. It is a pleasure to have you with us on this Monday evening. The time is 7:30 p.m. And on tonight's Youth Beat Radio, we will be speaking with Tariq Tari, who is part of the Somalian Documentary Project here in Columbus, Ohio. Tonight, we will be talking with Tariq about economic conditions for Somalian refugees. Later in the program, we will be speaking with students who are visiting from Montreal in Columbus, Ohio. These students are visiting at Columbus International High School, and they will be talking to us about their experience in America. That's coming up tonight on Youth Beat Radio here on 98.3 and 102.1 FM. We'll be right back. In our first story tonight on Youth Beat Radio, we will be speaking with Tariq Tari. Tariq Tari is part of the Somalian Documentary Project here in Columbus, Ohio. He is a filmmaker and has been documenting the Somalian refugees coming to the United States and to Columbus, Ohio. Tonight, Tariq will be talking to us on a variety of issues, including the economic conditions of Somalian refugees coming to Columbus, Ohio and the United States. We had a wonderful conversation with him. Okay, so tell our listeners a little bit about what you do for the Somali Documentary Project.
I am the project manager, and also I'm a photographer and a filmmaker as well.
Okay, so you have been documenting the Somalian community here in Columbus?
Yes, the organization has three solid members, Doug Rutledge, who's the writer of the project, Abdi Roble, who's the founder, and also myself, Tariq, who do the project managing and also co-photograph with Abdi.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about what your main objectives are for the film when filming.
Mm-hmm. The objective is to give voices to the voiceless, and also to advocate on behalf of refugee and refugee rights, particularly in the Somali community. In the U.S. and elsewhere abroad in the United States and Africa.
Okay. Are there a lot of refugees coming to Columbus, and what population would you say is coming here?
Well, the refugee policy changes year to year. In the mid-90s all the way through 2004, a large Somali resettlement process was going on in the United States, particularly in Columbus and other states. 2003, as you're aware of, the Iraq war started, so there's a lot of Iraqis who are coming to the United States even now. And now that have slowed down, the U.S. pulled out, there is the Bhutanese-Nepali community who is coming here in Columbus and the United States. So every year is changing. Before that, obviously, in the Vietnam War, there's a lot of Vietnamese coming, and so forth and so on. Every year every decade there's a problem, U.S. resettles refugees.
And tell me a little bit about the economic situations that they're living in Columbus. Obviously, we see that there's a lot of poverty in those areas. Is that what you're seeing as well? And tell us what can be done to maybe improve those situations?
Well, I mean, poverty, you know, it's not only a refugee problem, it's an American problem as well, and especially in certain areas, in certain pockets of Columbus. Certainly when refugees come here, they come here with simply a plastic bag with nothing in it. They don't even have clothes. And on top of that, the jobs that they could receive are not, you know, livable wages jobs, you know, housekeeping and you know, warehouse work and so forth. So it's the reason for the poverty is that and lack of English. And on top of that, the jobs they can't find anyway. So you've got and a landlord, and they're living in the conditions, by the way, if I may say so, the conditions that refugees, when they first resettle in the United States, it's inhumane. And I'm glad you bring that up, because every student, everybody listening, should visit the corridor of Morris between Carl and Cleveland. That corridor, that's where you see pocket refugees from Nepal, Somalia, and elsewhere living in subhuman conditions. And it is not right. Bed bug infestation, problems. And there's a group that called Friends of Summit Park. That's the apartment complex. They are actually advocating, and I want people to join the forces of those people to help out.
And what number are they coming to the United States? Because I understand here in Columbus there's around 45,000 here already. How many refugees are coming here every year?
Well, 45,000 refugees, it's actually more than that. And it depends how you look at the data. 45,000, 5 years from now, they will no longer be refugees. They'll be citizens, so they will not be counted as refugees. So the numbers constantly keep changing how you're looking at it. Somali refugees were the largest, and I don't think they're the largest anymore because things have changed. Other refugees came, and those Somalis have become U.S. citizens. So they're no longer sure. They still dress the same. They still talk the same, but they're no longer a refugee. So the majority of refugees today, I would assume, they are from Bhutanese-Nepalese community. That is the hardest hit community right now, because Somalis have been coming here for a long time. They've established businesses, so they help one another out. But the Nepalis seem to be in the pocket where they're still new. And also, the Somalis, their children have graduated from OSU, OU, and things have moved up. They're moving on to homes where there's middle-class America. So they're kind of doing okay. Not best, but okay. But Nepalis and other refugees are really, really having a hard time.
And they're also settling here in Columbus?
So let me track back the resettlement. You ask a good question. The resettlement, how many refugees are coming to the United States, that number is always, there's an argument which way or the other. But the Congress approves about 25,000 refugees per year. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean they only have to be from Somalia. They could be from Sri Lanka. They could be from, Afghanistan. So the numbers always vary from which continent or which war currently that is happening. So that's that. When they get resettled, they don't get concentrated resettlement. They will resettle a refugee to Nebraska, to California, to Florida. But those refugees, just like the immigrants before them and before them and before them, would call each other and say, come to Columbus, I'll house you in my house. So that's why you see a heavily condensed Somali community or Nepali community, because they're calling one another. And Columbus is a friendly city anyway.
Right. Tell me a little bit about how do they get here, because obviously an airplane ticket is very expensive for them to purchase. How is this being funded? I mean, is the U.S. government funding the airline tickets?
No, the U.S. government is not funding these tickets and this process. U.S. is signatory to Geneva Convention. U.S. and the industrial world promised World War II that they will help refugees in war and mass violence to resettle into their homes. And that was designed for the Europeans in World War II. Now that, the European war is no longer existent, still America and elsewhere, they're assigned to that signatory. So they have to resettle people. And plus, it's good for economy. It's good for refugees are an asset. They're not a liability. So America knows that. IOM, International Organization for Migration, mm-hmm. are the folks who are funding these tickets. But the refugee have to pay those tickets back. Mm-hmm. So if you and your family of seven came to America, it's about $10,000. You have to pay within a number of years those tickets back. So the refugee is in debt before they even start working.
Wow. Okay, my last question I want to ask you is, in Congress right now, there's a lot of talk about immigration reform. The president has brought this up, and, Congress hopefully will have a bipartisan bill. Will this help in your – what do you think of this?
It actually – the refugee First of all, that will not affect the refugee process. Refugee resettlement process is completely different what the immigration reform is. Refugees, when they first arrive to this country, they have the same legal rights as an American citizen, except they can't vote. That's the only thing they have the difference, and they can't travel freely and be gone for a while. So that is an international, and this is a domestic. Immigration problems, domestic immigration. Now, would that affect the Somalis in the future? Absolutely. When Somalia becomes a sovereign nation and they want to immigrate to the United States, that will affect them then. But now they are refugees, and refugee is someone who cannot return to their home due to persecution and violence. So, but the immigrants that you're seeing in America predominantly are economic problem. Right. It's not a violence problem. Therefore, America should or should not accept. It's the Congress's. Hopefully, they'll accept people.
Right. And businesses that we're seeing them, usually they're part of taxi companies here in Columbus. What are the other industries that they are part of usually?
Well, Somalis have moved from obviously coming here with nothing on their backs, most refugees. And you see about 20 years later, they own home healthcare businesses, they own trucking businesses, photography businesses. They are mainstream, and they're professors. Some are lawyers, and moving up into the American dream, so to speak.
And let me also ask you one other question about a crime in the area. We've seen a lot of news reports about violence on that part of the city. We've also heard at times about terrorism. Is this happening a lot? What is being done in this area to prevent this from happening?
Well, that's why an organization like us has to exist, because when we do a story about the community, it's our story. And we try to do as justice as possible. And it's not a fly-by newspaper. The problem with that kind of journalism is you stigma, you put a label on the entire community. Every community has a bad apple. I'm not saying that Somalis are prone to or not going to do any harm to anybody. Obviously, we have youth problems. Unemployment is very high. Drug abuse is also there. There's other problems just like everybody else.
Right.
When you label that entire community into one thing, it causes the bridge, the two communities, the American community and the Somali community, to be widened. And it's very sad. Terrorism. Yes, we've had problems. Somali kids left from Minneapolis and elsewhere to join jihadi wars in Somalia. Mm-hmm. Have some of them committed suicide. American, almost American born even. So that is a problem. But again, when Americans don't know their own history, and that's a problem. Italian kids went back in the 19th century to Italy to fight a war that was political there. So it's an immigrant story. Mm-hmm. Being connected to homeland, it is not a Somali thing, it's a bigger thing. Now, is that everybody should condemn that, but it's not only the Somalis that have done that. Mm-hmm. Japanese, any other nation, if you look at history back, there are youth who went back and wanted to change. Particularly the case of Italian-American is very, very well written about.
And there was a lot of other people say that education, that they don't have access to education in that area. Obviously, that's a side of the city that the schools might not be the very best, or the high school, I mean, colleges, access to college. Do you see that improving based on what the work you've been doing?
Improving is a very political way of saying, no, it's not happening. Uh-huh. So I can say improving if that is, I'm not satisfied. I'm not satisfied not only for the refugee population, I'm not satisfied for the African-American, the inner city. It is, our schools are failing. And the ones that fail is the economic lower ladder of people. Mm-hmm. And we should all stand up together and not only say, well, Somalis or the African-American or the other. It's an economic problem, and we should rise above it, and we should really demand the same education as New Albany or as Dublin or elsewhere. So we should have that same education.
How long have you been working with the documentary Somali Project?
So one documentary project we started in 2003. It's been 10 years. So 10 years we've been on the road filming.
Very interesting stuff. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you. I hope I gave you good stuff.
You did. Yeah. Thank you. Really appreciate it. And we have much more here on Youth Beat Radio here on 98.3 and 102.1 FM. Coming up next, we will be speaking with the students of Montreal about their experience in the United States as exchange students. That's coming up right after this. Welcome back. You're listening to Youth Beat Radio here on 98.3 and 102.1 FM. Thank you for being with us this evening. And tonight, next, we are going to be speaking with students from Montreal. These students are visiting from Montreal and are trying to see what it is like to go to a high school here in the United States. They spent about a week at Columbus International High School. And we are looking forward to our conversation with them. And welcome to the United States to all of you. This evening, if you can please tell me a little bit about your experience so far in the United States and in Columbus, Ohio. Well, what do you guys think of Columbus as a city?
Well, I love the Eastern Center. It's really nice. It seems very like in the olden times. And there was also this carriage. It's really nice to see.
It's a really great experience, especially just getting to go around and shop. It's fun. And also, seeing the food and the people, it's a great experience and seeing new things.
Yeah, basically, when we come from Canada to America, it's like a whole new, you just get the feeling of new attitude and new everything, because Americans are just, they're so nice towards Canadians.
Yeah, and I think that leads me to my question. What is the difference that you've seen so far between the United States and Canada so far, where you guys have come from?
Well, if I were to say difference, it's more like to Montreal, because I find the place we're staying in, near the Hampton Inn, it's very similar to the Toronto environment, mm-hmm. whereas in Montreal, it's the way they have their sidewalks or the roads, it's very different. Mm-hmm.
I would say the difference between Canadians and Americans thus far that I've noticed is that the accent, even though they don't admit it, they're like, I can hear the accent, but they don't hear it, and they think we have accents, so it's kind of funny.
Okay, very cool. And so tell me a little bit about the culture. Tell me a little bit about your culture that you've grown up in. Compare it, and you can tell me a little bit about how you want to compare that to the United States culture.
Well, I don't know. There was this kid who I talked to here. I don't know his name. He didn't tell me. But he was saying how it's very bad here. He had, he grew up in a very bad environment. It was very scary, where I don't think it's as bad in Montreal. So I guess that would be like the bit of a different environment change, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Well, in both places, I see a diverse community. So there's definitely people from all around the world in Canada and Montreal, in Canada and America. I think the way we act towards multiculturalism is very different. We have a different attitude about accepting people and kind of all respecting each other's different nationalities. Whereas in America, it's kind of you're all Americans. But you kind of lose a little bit of your own identity from where you're from, and they just kind of become Americans as a whole. So I don't know. It's just the way they treat different nationalities here.
I feel that the cultural diversity, there's actually a lot of diversity in America, mm-hmm. and also as well in Canada. And I think that it doesn't go by culture. I think it's actually where how people grow up, it's by the environment that you're in. So it's what your society, what you have around you. So, yeah, I think that's what defines how you grow up into a new society, that's what we see. That's when a person can distinguish changes within two different countries.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about the education at your school compared to this school. You guys have been at this school for a couple days now. So tell me, what are some of the differences you have noticed?
Okay, well, here, for example, you guys have high school or middle school, I guess you guys say, until grade 12, whereas we have it until 11th grade, then we have college and then university. So that's basically, I think, the only difference.
Also, I've noticed the amount of periods in a day, whereas I think you guys have like 7 or 8, and we only have 4 in a day. So it's like the different amount of classes, and I heard like it's always the same thing every day, whereas for us, we have a 9-day schedule and we rotate. We have a different day every day.
Yeah. One big one is the, because in Montreal, we have to have a French language. So in our school, we have to know French. Like, we don't have to know it, but we learn it mandatory probably every other day in school. And compared to here, you guys would learn French probably, what I heard according to what someone told me, you guys would learn French not that serious. And also the teachers, they're not really that good in French when they teach French classes.
Can I say something else about the thing? Yeah. Okay. Well, because also I noticed you guys have like a lot, the school has like 9 different languages they speak, and they have classes they take in it, whereas in our school we only learn English, French, and Spanish, because they're the 3 main languages, so I found that really cool. Also, you guys have, they have like that school, students divided into like houses, mm-hmm. whereas in our school everyone is just divided by grade level. Mm-hmm. So that was really cool.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about uniforms. What do you guys think about uniforms? Because in the United States, particularly in the public schools, students don't have uniforms. It can happen in private schools here. Are all the schools in Canada public, private? Do you have to wear uniforms? And what are your thoughts on uniforms?
Most like English AMSB schools have uniform, even private. But it's a couple of French schools that don't have uniform, but they're also most of them are also starting to get uniform now. They're starting to change, like the fact that there's no uniform, because they think it gives their school that identity, like the students. So yeah.
Like overall, I was talking to some of the students, and they're like, "Do you guys have to wear uniform? Do you like it?" And most of us were like, the kids from Marymount were like, "Huh, it's horrible. We don't really like it." But I spoke to this one girl, and she's like, "Do you know the struggle of having to buy different clothes all the time for a year? Like, it's astounding. Could you imagine? We just buy, we have, like, dress-down days where we could wear whatever we want, pay $2. Imagine doing that every single day. I can't imagine it. And especially, like, people in a school are so different. You come from different financial backgrounds, different cultures. You wear different clothes. You like different things. But when you're growing up in the same place and going to one school, it's hard to dress how you want and not be made fun of. So I can imagine your uniform is a really great thing, because at the end of the day, you don't have to worry. You just wear the same thing everyone else is wearing, and you go to school to learn. It doesn't really matter about what you wear.
So it's like exactly what they said. It just, it represents who we are. Mm-hmm. Like, because there's a lot of debates about in Montreal and probably all around the world, mm-hmm. where should you wear uniform or should you not wear uniform? And there's also a lot of pros and cons about that. But I'd say that wearing a uniform, it shows that, you know, how you're going to represent the school. Because I know a lot of students that might not like the uniform because, you know, it's just too much, or you can't wear it whatsoever. But it represents you. Because when we came to this school, you know, everyone starts looking at us in a way. It's like, oh, these guys have uniforms. Oh, it looks nice. And we look unique in front of them. We just don't look like outstanders, like just like mm-hmm. that.
Tell me a little bit about the class subjects that you guys are taught at your school. Here we learn English, we learn math, social studies, and science. Are those similar subjects that you learn in your schools?
Yeah, we have history, science, math, chemistry, and physics, and gym as like subjects. But we also, history changes as the years go by. We have geography too, but once you get to grade 9, they take it out and they give history the priority, and you have to pass it in order to graduate school, mm-hmm. like high school. And then once you get to sec 5, like history becomes like contemporary history. Like that's probably the only change.
It's yeah. like it's basically the same thing. Sometimes we just have like a little bit of different classes, but it's overall the same. We have to learn the same stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that we do have to learn the same stuff, but compared to this school and compared to our school, I think this school has more language options. Mm-hmm. Like they acquire more languages that they're interested in. In our school, we don't really have the choice of actually choosing it.
So are your classes taught in French, or are they all taught in English?
Well, because our school is an international, like IB back, like in IB school, the ones that are in IB have to have, we have geography, history, and French from grade 7 and 8. Mm-hmm. And then once you get to grade 9, the only French class you have is French.
Is there anything you guys want Americans to know about Montreal? Any stereotypes that you want ended?
Stereotypes. Basically, because we're in Quebec. Quebec wants to be very separate from the rest of Canada as a whole, because it was conquered by the French, right? So French language is a mandatory. If you're not from, like, certain cases, you can't even go to English school most of the time. Everyone is forced, like, immigrants are forced into French school. Mm-hmm. And some kids have never spoken French in their life, but they have to go to French school.
And for immigrants, it's like, you would get a job even if you don't know French. It's just that if you know French, you have more opportunities to get a job. And if you know English, you'll get the job, but it's just less chances in, like, getting a higher position in the job.
So everyone is bilingual, it seems. Everywhere you go, everyone will know English or French.
When you go to Montreal? Mm-hmm. No. A lot of, like, in the city, you see more people speaking English, but as soon as you go farther than the city, a lot of people speak more French. And also, like the typical Quebecois, they're very protective of their language and their culture. So overall, if you go into stores, some of them will just speak French to you, and you have to make do, because overall, they just feel like they don't want their language to be lost and their culture to be lost. So they kind of force it upon others to keep it alive.
Well, thank you to all of you for talking with me. I really appreciate it.
It was fun. It was a great time.
And I'd like to thank all of you for listening to Youth Beat Radio here on this Monday evening, here on 98.3 and 102.1 FM. It has been a pleasure to have you this evening, and we look forward to having you listen to us next Monday evening, again at 7:30 p.m., right here on 98.3 and 102.1 FM. You can find us online at youthbeat.osu.edu. And please like us on our Facebook page at Youth Beat Radio. Again, I'm Nishant Makija. For all of us at WCRS and Youth Beat Radio, have a wonderful evening. Good night. Youth Beat Radio is produced by youth from Central Ohio high schools, youth groups, and universities. The show is supported by the School of Environment and Natural Resources at The Ohio State University, Ohio State University Extension, the Puffin Foundation West, and local sponsors. The ideas expressed on tonight's program are not necessarily those of the station or sponsors.